This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording early today, Friday, May 13th, to accommodate some scheduling conflicts. I guess Friday the 13th, is it a bad omen? Will we get will people capitulate going into the close and not want to hold stocks over the weekend? Or will we get the late afternoon ramp going into the weekend?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that it's... Friday the 13th. May 13th is my second oldest childhood friend's birthday, going back to kindergarten. Joel, so happy birthday, Joel Walker. Go Cub Scouts Den 8.
Do you think he's listening?
No. Nor will I tell him about it. So in case someone knows Joel Walker, yeah. Wish him a happy birthday.
Just give him a little nudge.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this crazy week we had this week.
All right, so looking across the board here, the S&P 500 down about 2.5% at this time of recording. The worst performer of the 11 sectors is real estate, down about 4.5% on the week, and consumer staples down about 25 basis points or so. On the year-to-date basis, still have only two positive performing sectors: utilities up 50 basis points, and energy is up almost 50% still on the year-to-date basis. Moving over to fixed income, looks like the Treasury curve yields rallied across the board here. Two-year Treasury at closed the week at 260. That's 13 basis points lower than where we ended last Friday. The 10-year Treasury is down 22 basis points actually, I said end the week earlier, but in terms of where we are right now, the 10-year Treasury yield's at 2.9 and the 2-year Treasury's at 2.6. The long bond here is still over 3%, 3.1% on the round there, but it is down about 16 basis points over the prior week there. So pretty strong moves across the curve here in Treasury land. And
held above 3% on the 10-year for 3 days,
I guess. Yeah, it wasn't very long. I see it. We had it closed on last Friday, May 6th, at 3.13%. And like you said, it didn't really like that, the air up there, I guess. So it came back down, and we'll see where next week takes us as we continue to digest some of this incoming macroeconomic data.
But at least for once, you got the correlation, the negative correlation between stocks and bonds going, from that high. So we'll see if that continues to hold.
Yeah. And that's moving into the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate. We see that with a positive 1% right now on that broad-based bond index, but it's still down about 9.5% for the year to date. But it's nice to see this positive move. And then on the month-to-date basis, it looks like earlier this morning when I was looking at it, it did tick up positive by a few basis points, a little bit of the other way around, bro. Now it's down 4 basis points, at least at the time it was recording, for the month-to-date basis. So hopefully we can see some green by the end of this month for the egg on that window of time. But across the board, the components within the egg all positive, as we can imagine here. The best sector, or I guess this is an order of best performance to least best, is the agency MBS was up 1.4%. Treasury is up 1%, and IG corporate credit just a little bit under the 1 mark, but it's at 90 basis points positive for the week. And even EM turned in a positive so far for this week, up a 0.25.
Pretty interesting from that. I was gonna say it's pretty interesting from the IG space that it's you got the worst performer when rates are rising because of this long duration, and then now that we got a little rally in rates, it's still the worst performer. So must be getting some of that spread widening on it.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was taking a look at a little bit of the spreads today. It seemed like they held pretty pat through most of the week, but then today they're out 2 basis points. So, that seems like it contributed a little bit to that as well. And as you mentioned earlier, it's kind of nice to see things shaking out the way we would, we would think they would, with fixed income doing fairly well on this back of a weak equity market for this week. And it seems to have lined up too across some of the corporate credit sectors that we look at that are below investment grade. High yield corporate credit's down 80 basis points this week, and then bank loans, the floating rate notes there is down 1.6% on this week to date basis. So bank loans still the best performer within this cohort that we look at within fixed income land, down about 4% relative to IG corporate credit, down 15%. And then moving over to commodity land, looking at the Bloomberg commodity index, it's down almost 2% on this week to date basis. It's improved a little bit over where I looked at it this morning, but still negative. But on the year to date, we see a positive 30% or so on the Bloomberg, on the broad basket of commodities. Bitcoin took a bit of a tumble, as it seems like we've been talking about for the past few weeks. It seems like it's had a rough time, but this week was particularly tough. It's down 16% over last Friday. It did get down as low as 25,000 a coin, Bitcoin, at some point this week, but right now it looks like it's trying to stay above 30. It's $30,200 a Bitcoin down right now. So on a year-to-date basis, it's still down about 35%. So within the broad kind of universe of financial assets that we look at, this, if you consider the financial asset, is the worst performer, and it's somewhat indicative of the pain that we've seen in not all digital assets, perhaps, but at least in these digital currencies through the year.
Yeah, it's again, we still use it as a risk barometer. So it's while it has rallied, I guess going from 25,000 to 30,000 is a big percentage change, but on the week still down a lot. So still kind of a not a good time for the risk side of things.
Yeah, at least it's seeming to hold that hat on pretty well as the risk barometer hat. At least it seems to be ringing true to that. As we've talked about, it doesn't seem to be some of the other claims of being an inflation hedge or perhaps a store of value through digital gold. It doesn't seem to be wearing that hat as well. So we'll see as Bitcoin and the crypto markets and the investors try to figure out the story behind or the narrative as to the rationale for holding these things.
Right.
So with that wraps up the market. Do you want to kick us off on what happened this past week in macro land?
Yeah, we had a pretty quiet week in terms of a number of headlines or macro news that we thought was interesting, but important ones. So on Wednesday we got the CPI, the consumer price index. For April, the headline number was up 0.3%. It was expected to be up 0.2%, so surprised to the upside there. Core CPI was up 0.6% versus a 0.4% expectations. These numbers brought the year-over-year headline number up to 8.3% and the core up to 6.2%. Really looking at the big drivers of it, core services was up 0.4%. Goods was kind of flat, only up 0.04%. These are month over month. Food was up 0.12%, and energy was actually down. So energy was helping keep headline CPI down a little bit, down 0.22%. Really the biggest mover, absolute mover, not contributor, but the biggest absolute mover was airline fares, up 18.6%. We should see over the coming months, core goods continuing to drop. It was, you know, as I said, it was up 0.04%. So continuing to not really add too much to the inflation number, but you know, core services could continue rising. So that's just something to keep an eye on, and kind of why the market was a little bit wary of that CPI, and not really thinking it's a, you know, not as peaky as we were thinking it might be. Then yeah, yesterday on Thursday, we did get the PPI. That number was up 0.5% headline as expected. Core went from 0.7% last month to 0.4% this month. That kind of it tempers it a little bit, brings core year over year to 8.8% and headline to 11.0%. So still very elevated numbers, but coming down a little bit. Faye on our multi-asset team, his expectation is that the persistent inflation shown in PPI will continue to filter into CPI, so that the Fed's still going to be on course to raise rates pretty significantly here over the short terms, or I guess medium term. And that kind of brings us to the Fed. Last night on Thursday, the Senate finally confirmed Jerome Powell as Fed chair for his second term. I think I saw it was 80 votes for, 19 against. So he will be chair, even though his term did expire. He still continued to be chair. So no changes there. But Powell did have a little speech last night, and I pulled a couple interesting quotes that I thought were interesting on given his mind frame. And he said, quote, "The process of getting inflation down to 2% will also include some pain, but ultimately the most painful thing would be if we were to fail to deal with it and inflation were to get entrenched in the economy at high levels. The question whether we can execute a soft landing or not, it may actually depend on factors that we don't control, but we should control the controllable. There's a job to do on demand." So, and that's the end of his quote. And really, thinking about it, he's still focused on inflation, still focused on Fed raising rates, it was interesting for him to say that, some of the soft or as he said in his press conference, soft-ish landing, that there's some factors that they can't control. But really he's trying to hurt the demand side of things, and whether they can get inflation down without inducing a recession remains to be seen. But it's pretty interesting, or just shows that he's still focused on inflation. I would hope so. It's only been a week. We haven't really gotten any information that would turn him away from focusing on inflation, but certainly continuing to pound the drum on inflation. Don't get entrenched. We're going to bring it down. We're going to crush demand, but maybe it's not going to be crushing demand, but at least try to reduce in the demand out there to try to get inflation under control.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if his tone changes at all now, or at least his tone, or perhaps his process in these meetings and the accompanying presser afterwards, just given the fact that he has gotten his confirmation now and it's kind of sealed the deal, so to speak, and see if that brings out a different side of Powell, at least in the rhetoric.
Yeah, but I still think he's going to still be, we did notice maybe a shift in his tone, right, when he was nominated, and shift towards inflation fighting. So that continued at least last night. So maybe will he be turned more dovish, I guess, would be the only way to kind of look at it. Is he kind of not focused as much on inflation now that he's confirmed?
Yeah, we'll see. It's not too long before the next one. Is it June 15th, I think?
I think that's right.
So about a month from now. Let's see how this develops.
Yep, but that's it for the macro side of things, Sam. Let's move on to the topic of the week. And it was something that we don't normally cover. We do talk about Bitcoin, but we don't normally talk about stable coins and what they are. But given the kind of volatility we saw on the market, its potential kind of knock-on effects onto financial markets, and whether there's going to be some contagion from the stablecoin meltdown, or at least a stablecoin meltdown out there. And we thought it would be a good topic to cover, and something that we think would be interesting to our listeners. So Sam, why don't you kind of start us off on the high level, and we'll try to stay high level here on stablecoins.
All right. So with that, let's start off with definition and give our listeners a sense of what it is in case they don't already know. But stable coins are a type of cryptocurrency that seek to maintain a stable value against the U.S. dollar. And to maintain the stability, these coins are usually support, or oftentimes, let's just say, yes, usually supported by a reserve of U.S. dollars or some type of other asset. And this is where it gets kind of squishy, but some other type of asset that has an equivalent value in U.S. dollars. So these type of assets can range anywhere. I've seen perhaps sometimes there's gold or some type of other commodity, but where it gets really squishy is sometimes these reserves can take up the form of other digital assets, other cryptocurrencies, if you will, to make up those that reserve. So kind of the stability is dependent in that case on something that is backed by something that's actually quite volatile. So to me, that sounds like it could pose a problem in the future. And I guess that's why we're kind of talking about today as well. But there is another form of stablecoin that rather than being backed up by a reserve, those stablecoins tend to, or they do look to maintain stable values by adjusting the supply of that coin. And those are called algorithmic stablecoins there. With regards to stablecoins, issuers of these coins make the claim that you can always redeem one stablecoin for one U.S. dollar. It sort of takes on a trust me approach. And when we take a look at the universe, the largest stablecoin, Tether, states that all Tether coins or tokens rather are pegged at a one-to-one with a matching fiat currency that are backed by 100% by Tether's reserves. But to my knowledge, those reserves that back up the various stablecoins are kind of made on opaque claims, and they'll say that they have a certain percentage of backing based on, they're actually very specific when it comes to the cash in, let's just say T-bills or perhaps some other short-dated financial instruments, but then it gets a little bit opaque with this other category sometimes, and they don't really tell you what's inside of that. So on top of that, these reserves tend to also take on the trust me approach where there's no auditing done on said reserves to verify the claims there. And I did take a look at the second biggest coin, which is the U.S. dollar coin that's issued by Coinbase, and they make very similar claims to Tether in the fact that they are redeemable at all times at a one-to-one basis for one U.S. dollar coin to one U.S. dollar there. So that is kind of the trust me approach that these stable coins take. And when we think about and look at the various common use cases for stable coins, they're there to facilitate really the trading and exchange of digital assets and allowing users to not have to, and holders not to, to leave or exit the crypto ecosystem. And there you, within there, that ecosystem, you have that perceived stability and value of the U.S. dollar in that said stable coin. So let's just say if you wanted to trade Bitcoin, you could do so for a stable coin instead of a U.S. dollar and some other type of fiat currency. And today, when we look at it, over half of the Bitcoin and Ethereum that's exchanged on these crypto exchanges, they're against a stable coin rather than some form of fiat currency. So if you wanted, another use case is if you wanted to pay someone for something, doing so in stablecoin reduces the potential for price fluctuations that would be more common in other digital currencies. So that's at least in theory, at least. So, and then finally, there is also cryptocurrency lending where you can earn a pretty significant interest rate on your cryptocurrency, including stablecoin if you were to post those up. In terms of what happened and why we're talking about it today, we'll look at UST, which is the ticker for a stablecoin by the name of Terra USD, which is also pegged to the dollar. And prior to this week's bloodbath, UST was the third largest stablecoin and growing by market cap. Now, UST is associated with another cryptocurrency where holders are supposed to be able to swap one UST for $1 worth of a coin called Luna. And the supply of UST and Luna is dynamically controlled by an algorithm where the goal is to keep the UST's price steady at or very close to $1 as it is for other stable coins out there like Tether and USDC. But UST, again, the Terra USD stablecoin, began to devalue earlier this week, where it got down to as low as 60 cents a coin on Monday. And then recently it dropped yesterday. I saw that it was as low as 5 cents. But right now it seems to have rebounded back a little bit to right around 10 cents or so a UST. And then when we look at its counterpart, Luna had traded above $80 last week. It was above $100 in the last 12 months. But last night it got down to around a penny or so. And then today, it's funny, you and me, Jeff, we had to come out and figure out our vernacular around this. But today I see it at around 5/1000ths of a penny or a tenth of a pip, if we're talking about it as a currency there. So with it there, it still looks to be trading, but when you look at the chart, it looks like it's just pretty much flatlined down there. So I'm not sure who's buying it. But I guess if you have faith in Luna or USD, I guess you know the argument could be that you could buy these things at pretty significant discounts at this point here. But
Luna needs to do a reverse coin split, right? Like, you know, when the stocks get down below a penny, they you know, the penny stocks, they do a reverse split to go back up to $10 or whatever. Luna needs to do that. It's not never a good sign when you're like counting the zeros, the leading zeros into to try to figure out how many, you know, to how low it is. Or, you know, it's kind of like when you're looking at the yen to dollar trade, right? When people do the inverse of what you normally look at it. And today it's like 129, but when it's, you know, 1/129, you have to like count it. And so the Terra or Luna needs to, to do some little marketing there, as you know, traditional finance has done.
Yeah, and I will disagree with you on one point though. Counting the zeros is quite nice if you're counting it to the left of the decimal point. But I agree with you on counting it to the right is pretty sucks. So with that, the process that Terra USD uses around the pairing is that each time, you know, and this is to kind of maintain that stability, is that each time one UST is swapped for one Luna, then the UST is removed from circulation, and the jargon around that is burned. But the way that they maintain stability is that, in theory, is that if the UST falls below a dollar, then holders of that UST can potentially gain by exchanging their Terra for a dollar's worth of Luna. And when this happens, then the UST is burned from circulation and supply is reduced until the UST's value reaches a dollar again. And the same can happen here in reverse in order to maintain the value of the UST at or near a dollar. And according to Coinbase, the reason that the UST devalued against the dollar earlier this past weekend is that hundreds of millions of dollars of both UST and Luna were rapidly sold across exchanges, pushing the UST to around 98 cents over the weekend before it rebounded again. But then, as we discussed earlier, this last week has been kind of a bloodbath for the stablecoin here. And what contributed to that bloodbath this week was that some sellers of UST reportedly found that they were unable to redeem their stablecoin for that promised $1 in value of Luna. So that really added to that crisis of confidence, which could be devastating to things in digital assets, where the value is really based, I think, on a narrative or story or faith, whatever you call it, than something that's actually tangible.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at the algorithm, you weren't. It was built, or you know, it seems to be built on the fact that the Luna and the Terra would move in, you know, in opposite directions. They'd be negatively correlated. But if someone comes out and tries to sell both of them, and you know, if you put enough size on it and driving the price of both of them down, then the algorithm would kind of break. Basically, is what happened. They would look at it and see, oh, the algorithm's going to break, because if you drive both of them down, you keep that redemption process doesn't work anymore. And so it seems, it's still in the early days and maybe you never know, but it seems like it was kind of a purposeful move to someone to sell and, kind of drive both of those prices down.
Yeah, I guess they had the equivalent of the big shot from Nickel here in the in cryptocurrency land as well. But what you just said, you know, the breaking of this algorithm, I think that's right. And one thing that gives me pause here and makes me a little bit nervous is that a number of people in this space make the comparison of this algorithm process of, you know, swapping one for the other and removing the other from circulation at the same time is and mirrors the process that the Federal Reserve uses to manage their balance sheets here. So let's hopefully that, you know, hopefully the Fed has a little bit better system around this, given all the thousands of PhDs that they employ.
Well, I also think that the Fed has a bigger balance sheet, but you know, than the backers of Terra, but also, you know, every time that there is a peg, or not every time, but a lot of times you see a peg and you see that at some point the markets try to move against the peg, and whether you know, I think when we see it in Aussie dollar or in Australia and Japan a little bit, when you get up close to that level and if, you know, the market forces can move it, that the central banks have to put a lot of money behind it to kind of keep that peg, or they actually just break the peg. And so it's a, you know, these types of things where it's pegged and people know where the peg is certainly are ripe for some competition.
Yeah, it's definitely, you see the momentum really build once it gets around that level as well. And then struggle becomes real, right, to maintain that level. Earlier in the podcast, you mentioned about contagion as well. So that's something that I know people in the digital asset space are certainly worried about. But, you know, as practitioners within traditional financial markets, we always think about contagion risk as well. And, you know, right now it doesn't seem like there's anything. I mean, we're definitely watchful around this. It does seem to be a fairly niche market, small impact, but that's kind of the thing that, you know, when we look at past financial crises or, you know, just financial events, they tend to be, you know, people tend to blow it off as saying, "Is this is such a small piece of the market that's not going to have any impact?" But the economy and the market always or tends to prove them wrong afterwards, right? When we look at things with the benefit of hindsight, so we'll definitely be keeping an eye on this. But thus far, when we look at the two largest stable coins, Tether and U.S. dollar coin, those seem to be holding that buck right at that dollar line right now, at least based on the exchanges that we're looking at here. We mentioned before that both of these coins supposedly are backed in part by a combination of T-bills and cash and, you know, perhaps commercial paper, but there's also that other kind of category of other dollar-based assets, which could be read as other digital-based assets as well. So overall, it's you know, again, it's somewhat vague in terms of what they claim to hold, and again, those claims are unverified. But I saw that you did post up something here saying that, where is it here, that the Tether is backed by 84% of its assets are in cash and equivalents, and then 6.4% in other investments, including digital tokens. So where the rest remains, not sure. But again, those are unverified claims, so you kind of have to take it as it is. But overall, Tether did release a number of statements via the Twitter this week. They from the chief technology officer, Paolo Arduino, he did say that, quote, "We do not believe that the UST, that is the Terra USD situation, means anything for the centralized stablecoin market. They are entirely different types of assets." Not sure how much I believe that, but then again, I'm less familiar with these types of digital currencies, but entirely different is a pretty strong statement, I think. But we'll see if that remains to if that holds. And then he also later in a different tweet said that investors can continue to redeem their tokens, the Tether tokens, at a 1-to-1 value to the dollar via the Tether platform, and that Tether had redeemed over 300 million in tokens in the last 24 hours, quote, "without a sweat drop," end quote. So pretty confident, you know, it sounds like he has a lot of conviction and confidence in his in his coin there, and I hope that it is well deserved, that confidence. We'll see what happens though.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Sam, as we talked about contagion, and if you remember the money market debacle, it wasn't that when the money markets broke the buck, it was because the collateral they held, or it's generally accepted that it's, they had Lehman commercial paper that, was priced at par. And the next day it was, it was like 90 cents on the dollar on a good day. And so having that exposure broke the buck for them. So really the question of this, 84% of Tether assets in cash and equivalents, what's the equivalence, or do they hold the whatever today's equivalent is of the Lehman commercial paper? And that if there's some problems, is that going to break the buck? And I thought it was interesting that, whether it's that's just Tether. I think there's been some questions, or I've seen at least on Twitter, some questions about what Tether holds. And I wanted to say shady, but they're not very forthcoming about what they hold. But I wouldn't, I wouldn't be as forthcoming either if I was them, because you could see someone do something like they did with the Terra, where they're going to target what you hold and bring everything crashing down. The thing with Terra was that everyone knew, or knew, it was public information on how it worked. Here, at least on Tether, it's not as public, but it's really the question of what do they hold, and will it continue to be priced at par? So that's the real question there. But I think anytime you hold these stable coins, I think one of our portfolio managers, Sam Garz, was talking yesterday about it, and he's like, the convexity is really bad on holding these, and what those of us in the investment side knew what he meant, but to spell it out for people. If you held Terra at a buck, what's your upside? Your upside is it stays at a dollar. There's no real upside to it unless you're lending it out and getting some yield on it. But from a price perspective, you're kind of capped at a dollar. Maybe it goes up a little bit, but certainly if it's at 10 cents now, your downside is 90%. That's up a percent or two, down 90%. I think that's what we call bad convexity.
indeed. So hopefully our listeners found this useful, probably have seen it on the news, and that's why we thought it would be a good topic of the week. Hopefully we're not hearing too much more about it next week and then things calm down. I would note that this isn't the first time that a so-called stable coin has been unstable, to the point where the lack of stability takes them out of existence. So this one and among another, a string of I guess blowups, I think you can call it that, with Terra and Luna. But taking a look again with the Tether and the USD coin, they do seem to be holding in well, at least for now. So it doesn't seem like it the contagion has impacted that. But with that, let's see, in terms of the things that we are keeping an eye on for next week, on Tuesday we have retail sales coming out, and the estimate is up to 0.9% from the previous period of 0.7. Ex-auto retail sales, the so-called control group there, is expected to be down from 1.4% the previous period, down to 0.4%. And then on Thursday, we have LDIs coming out, with the month-over-month expected to be flat to down from what we had last month of 0.3%, but we do have a 1.1% rolling off from last year. So this should bring the number on LEI closer to a five handle. So we are getting closer to that, putting LEI on, using LEI as a going on watch indicator for the U.S. economy. So pretty light week next week. Retail sales perhaps could be a little bit of market moving, but it seems like they're not going to be, at least from the estimates, it doesn't seem to be very strong moves, but we'll see if the actual print surprise or not.
Yeah, it'll be a good week for you to take a vacation.
Huh, maybe I'll do so.
All right. Well, maybe we'll line up Eric Dahl again for the podcast next week, and this time it'll be me and Eric.
That sounds good. I'm going to have to, it may be the first Monday morning minutes I actually listen in on. Instead of participating on.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week, Sam. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to us out there. Monday morning minutes, please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up each episode on Mondays before the bell. Sometimes we do provide them out a little bit earlier, but in case you forgot, MMM is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you can find your podcast today on your favorite platform there. If you don't find them there, if you have any other questions, suggestions, or hate, you can go ahead and send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com, or if you choose, you can also do it via the Twitter at DLine Minutes.
And you can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/doubleline capital. And don't forget Sam's other podcast, The Sherman Show, just dropped an episode yesterday. Make sure to follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Sam, enjoy your vacation next week, and hope everyone else has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.